Good morning. Let me just draw a few things to your attention before we begin. On Tuesday, we have our church members' meeting. And if you're a member here, strongly encourage you to come, if at all possible. We have had a series on waiting on God, that sermon series. We have had our church weekend away, which was a very important time for us to gather and think and pray. And we've just had a week of prayer, a prayer chain going through the whole of this week. You know, if ever there was a good time to then say in concrete terms, what is it we feel God has said and how do we act in obedience to that? What are the next steps we need to take? Then surely this is a great time. So if you can come on Tuesday, please come to that. It'll be a very important time. Not just for mothers, Breeze has announced it. I was fearful of this, the dads might feel a bit left out. So just to say, on the same day, down at Northway Church, run by Northway Church at 5, we have Super Dads, okay? So make not just for mothers your priority, but if you've got any spare kids who are not coming to that, and you've got a dad at home, then go to this, because they've got a visit by Lush. And that's good, isn't it? Lush. Sorry? Lush what? Well, it's more than soap. Have you been in Lush recently? It's a lifestyle choice. And you'll never smell anything ever again afterwards. And just a reminder, we have this sort of day conference on prayer coming up. It's in a couple of weeks' time. Is it on 17th? Is that right? I can't read it from 17th of March. It's here. It's free. But I do need to know names. Now, this isn't a day where we're going to spend the whole day praying. This is a day we're going to spend the whole day talking about prayer. I know some of you are not convinced about that, but I think this is useful if you want to explore the understanding of prayer deeper. Or particularly if you have questions about prayer, if you have little struggles like what's going on here, God's not answering, and that, those sorts of things, I think this could be useful to you. So just a reminder, I do need to know names. Okay, so if you want to go, please let me know. And, yes, on Easter Day, this is a reminder, we have that baptism service, April the 1st, it's not an April Fool, it's happening, and we... If you're here this morning and if you have not been baptized, and I know that's true for some of you, whatever your age, then let us know. Let James or I know, because we would love to see you go through that act of obedience and be baptized on Easter Day. It'd be a thrilling occasion. Just one more thing I want to mention. At the church weekend away, do you remember we played Send to All? If you were there, that... I was asked by Eleanor and Rod to send a text to most of my contacts saying, I'm very happy being a Baptist minister, but I sometimes wonder what else I could have done with my life. And people gave responses, but I got one this week from LinkedIn, which this is what LinkedIn said I should be doing with my life. And if you look there, the third one is Hindu priest, Pujari, and... what is an applications evangelist? Does anyone? Microsoft the Word, that sort of thing. Anyway, that's LinkedIn for it. Right, we are starting a new sermon series today. I apologize for my voice. I've slightly succumbed to the beast from the east, as sure you, some of you feel that too. But we're starting a new series, and we're going to be thinking about how we serve God through the use of our time, through the use of our talents, our spiritual gifts, our homes, our finance, a whole range of ways in which we are called to serve God. And this morning I'm speaking on costly discipleship from Luke 14. Next week Nick will be speaking on, faithful stewardship from 1 Peter 4. And then James will speak on devoted fellowship from Acts chapter 2. Now, as part of this, we will have a gift day in 2 weeks' time. Our proposal is on that day that we will just take a free will offering in the service. But that money that is raised will not go to the ministry of HBC specifically. We have a couple of other places that we want to use that money for, to send that money to. I'm not allowed to say. But we have an absolute mouth-wateringly good idea. So I think we'll probably confirm it on Tuesday at the members' meeting, and we'll announce it next week. But it's going to be a very exciting offering. Also, we'll take that as a moment to just to think about and review our regular giving to HBC, because we think it's important to do that. Right. So here's... Can you read that at the back? Good. Steve can. Good. Well, let me read this to us. These are words from Luke 14. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus. And turning to them, he said, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple." Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, "This person began to build and wasn't able to finish." Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able, with 10,000 men, to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. I think if I were to put today's verses into a single sentence, I think it would probably be this. I hope you can read that. Following Jesus means that we have to put him before all else. Okay? Following Jesus means we have to put him before all else. Before all other things, before all other people. I think it's true to say the spirit of what Jesus shares here as he's walking along the road is, following me is all or nothing. It's an all or nothing kind of thing. Now, we're told that large crowds were following Jesus, and you have to ask, why are large crowds following him? And to be honest, a lot of them were following because they'd seen the miracles, they'd seen the healings and the spectacle. A lot were caught up in the euphoria of the moment. Jesus is trending, so they're along for the ride sort of thing. Whole mixed bag of reasons that people are following him. But Jesus makes it really clear here, he's not looking for casual followers. And he's certainly not looking for spectators. He's looking for disciples. And in those verses that Jesus says, it sounds for all the world like he is trying to put them off. He is trying to put them off by saying just how very high the cost is. Because he doesn't want people tagging along with him out of curiosity. He wants people to follow him wholeheartedly. Okay, and that's why the one thing that's repeated three times here is that phrase, "cannot be my disciple." Jesus is not saying, "Oh, you can be my disciple." He's saying, look, if you don't pay the cost, you cannot be my disciple. So let's begin with verse 26 then. "If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple." James, do you want to say a few words about this? These are strong words, aren't they? I would like to say that in the Greek, it doesn't really mean that, but it does. It is the word hate. Is Jesus like one of those cult leaders that we read about in the news who separates people from their families because then they can control them and manipulate them so much more easily? Is that what's going on here? Well, of course, a very important principle of understanding what Jesus said and of any verse in the Bible is we need to understand everything in the context of everything else. Because God's not in the habit of contradicting himself. And if you look at the Ten Commandments, we are told we have to honor father and mother, hold them in esteem and respect, then you'll live a long life. Things will go well with you. Jesus has already said in the Sermon on the Mount, don't just love your friends, even the pagans love their friends, He says, love your enemies. It was quite clear in Jesus' teaching that he calls us to love absolutely everyone with God's love. So what we have here really is not Jesus telling us to literally hate our parents, our spouses and children. I think what we have here, two things. One is, this is a piece of hyperbole. You may not like hyperboles, but actually hyperbole was a very common rhetorical device of the day, where people would say something very strongly to make their point. But also, in the background Hebrew, there's a sense that this word hate in Hebrew can mean not so much to hate as to love less. It carries that sense of loving something less than something else. And I think that is what lies in part behind what Jesus is saying here. He's not saying don't love your mother and father. He's saying love me more. Love God more. Okay, I hope I'm not being slippery here with the text. I don't think I am. I think this is actually what Jesus is saying. So he's not calling us to psychological hatred. You do agree with that, don't you? Good. He is saying, you have to put me before all else, before even your mother and father, who you long to please, and your children, who you long to care for and protect. I have to have precedence. You know, I've found that sometimes in the Bible, there are some verses that we don't understand until we go through a certain situation, and then they make sense to us. And I struggled with this verse for years, hating mother and father. But a number of years ago, I felt God was calling me to go and work in India for a while. And my mum was delighted, but my dad wasn't. He wasn't a Christian at the time, and he was downright opposed to the idea. I remember he told me, you know, you can't go, you shouldn't go. He said, the trouble started when you chose to do theology in the first place. You know, he basically sort of rubbished the whole of my life. And part of me said, oh, you know, I wanted to please my father, of course. And part of me said, oh, well, then I won't go. And I remembered this verse. And it's interesting because that was the first time I really understood that verse, because the desire in us to please those who are closest to us is profound. And when what they are saying is opposed to God's will for you, it takes a huge amount of strength to say no. No, I'm going to disregard. I didn't hate my father, but I had to, in a sense, strongly oppose his will for my life and follow what I believe was Christ's will for my life. It takes a lot of strength. And just in defense of my father, he was just scared. He was scared that something would happen to me while I was there. And then actually once I'd gone, he became hugely supportive and visited and everything. But anyway, so Andy became a Christian after that. But we're told here then, Christ has to come first, not just with people, but Jesus says also with our own lives. Everything about us, our breath, everything has to come second to Jesus. At the end of January, I led the older youth over there in Barbara's. We did annex some of them are here today in the service. And we looked at a whole range of activities. Here they are, some of them. Eating, sport, talking to friends, prayer, so on, spending time with family. YouTube was on there, I removed that one, but a whole load of things. And then they had to say, how important is this? You know, the sort of that Jesus is the answer sort of thing, but how important is this? And then, but then how importantly do I treat this in my life? Okay. And it was really interesting. Actually, this was an opening icebreaker, and we spent about 40 minutes just discussing this, but it was a very fruitful discussion, I think. And the conclusion I think we came to, correct me if I'm wrong, young people, was that actually Jesus did come first, or must come first. How can Jesus, though, you might ask, be more important than food and water? You know, there's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and you see there, right at the bottom, basic needs, physiological needs, food, water, warmth, and rest. But these are the very things that Jesus says, I come before these things. We die without these things. Jesus knows that. He's got a human body. But he said, I come before these. Don't worry about these. God will look after you. Heavenly Father, seek first my kingdom. That's the... I love that. I've shown it before, but it makes me laugh. He's more important than Wi-Fi. Praise God for that. Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, don't worry about food, clothing, and so on. 1 Timothy 4:8, Jesus said, for physical training, Dave, looking at you, physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things. He knows that. You know, physical training, exercise, we could make, Dave doesn't, but we could make an idol of that in our lives. But we're told, actually, no, godliness is more important. And we have these words in Luke 14 about mother and father. So I think a lot of people would say, where does God belong? Where does our faith belong in this sort of hierarchy of needs? And some might put it near the top. But I think, actually, it's not a great diagram, but it's Christ, actually, that is the foundation for us. He is the foundation of the whole of our lives. Following Jesus, then, is not just a hobby or an interest. It's not a part-time pursuit. We don't have a little sort of God slot, God box, God compartment in our life. We don't just follow him when the sun's shining. Following Jesus is total. It's a total giving of ourselves to Christ. Now, I think I need to say, Jesus isn't calling us to give up everything. He's not saying, give up your family, give up your friends, give up your career, give up your house, give up your bank account. He's not saying that. But what he is saying is, you need to recognize that all of those things in your life come before me, and I may call upon you to make sacrifices in some of those areas. And if I do, even if it's for a time, you need to be prepared to do that for me. And I think that comes out very clearly in verse 27 here. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. We noted at the beginning, Jesus said these words as he's on the road. Where's he going? Well, this is Luke 14. Right back in Luke 9, verse 51, we read that Jesus set out resolutely to Jerusalem. He is on the way to his death. I love the older versions. He set his face like a flint to Jerusalem. So already you can see here that, if you like, the shadow of the cross is extending right back. It's on Jesus' mind, and he uses the very thing he's going to face to describe our discipleship here. What does it mean to carry our cross? Well, one thing we do know is it doesn't sound comfortable. And that, I think, is where we need to receive a challenge this morning. Crucifixion is not comfortable. We live in a comfortable part of the world. It's not our fault, but we do. We have fairly comfortable lives. But the term Jesus uses to describe what he wants to do in our lives is crucifixion. Crucifixion. He's saying, you, the aim of your life is not to live for pleasure or luxury or indulgence. The aim of our lives is not to live for financial and physical security. We don't even live to pursue our own goals and ambitions primarily, but we live for Christ. Who is this Christ that we live for? He was the crucified one. He was crucified, and he is the one that we're told to follow in his steps. So we have an awful lot of dying to do, yeah? We have a lot of dying to do, not biological death, but dying to self, dying to all those precious things, those intruders, those interlopers, who would sort of want to squeeze in and say, I'm important, make me a priority. We got to die to those things. Last week I was at the Southern Counties Baptist Association Ministers Conference. There's 120 ministers there. And at one point in one of the sessions, we were given little post-it notes, because it was a Christian conference. And we're told, sorry, I've not been, but we're told to write on, they were flame-shaped as well, but we're told to write on them what we wanted to say to God. Okay, what do we want to say to God? And I wrote on mine, he must increase, I must decrease. Because I know that I've got a lot of dying to self to do. Now then, when the speaker stood up, which was Ian Stackhouse from Milmead, from Guildford Baptist Church, he referenced this, because they're all on the wall, by, and he said, I wonder if anyone here wrote, he must increase, I must decrease. He said, what a great thing that would be to write. He said, that takes a profound sense of security in God. And I'm there like, me? I got it right. The irony. We have a lot of dying to self to do. You recognize this guy, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German theologian who wrote the book, he wrote many books, but the famous one, perhaps most famous, is Cost of Discipleship. He wrote that book in 1937, and of course, 2 years later, the Second World War broke out. And he, as a German Christian, opposed Hitler and stood for God. He stood for Christ, and it cost him his life. And I just thought that book, you know, The Cost of Discipleship, what sort of book would we write today to describe Christianity around here? What would it be? Something to describe. Would it be the comfort of Christianity or the comfort of discipleship? You know, we are comfortable. Comfortable discipleship. Comfortable discipleship tells us to love others. Love your family, love your friends. Costly discipleship says, love your enemies. Comfortable discipleship says, you know, we should forgive people, especially when they're a little bit penitent. Costly discipleship says, no, we forgive 70 times 7. That's 490 times, at least. Comfortable discipleship says, well, we can know God's peace much of the time. Costly discipleship says, no, we can know God's peace all of the time, because there is a peace in God that passes understanding. Comfortable discipleship says, as long as we're wealthy and healthy, or at least relatively so, we can know joy. Jesus tells us we can rejoice even in the face of suffering and persecution. Comfortable discipleship says that we can be broadly content when our basic needs are met. Costly discipleship says we can be content whether well-fed or hungry, whether in plenty or in want. Comfortable discipleship gives God some of our money. Costly discipleship says, Lord, this is all yours, actually, and it is at your disposal. Comfortable discipleship says, we are no longer slaves to sin. Costly discipleship says, yes, but we're still slaves. We're slaves now to righteousness. And we don't do as we please, we do as God pleases. Comfortable discipleship fits God around our life. Costly discipleship fits our life around God. That's the difference. And it's very hard for me to say those words because I'm part of the problem. I'm comfortable too in many ways. I'm not saying you all are here. Some of you are not comfortable. You're going through really difficult times. I know that. But there is a challenge here. Jesus is not looking for easy converts. He is not playing nice organ music to create a sort of an atmosphere in which people will just respond and say, yes, I will follow you, actually, after all. He is saying there is a cost to following me, and it's a big cost. So make sure you're willing to pay it. And that's where these two parables come in. Verse 28 here. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? For if you lay the foundation and are not able to finish it, everyone who sees it will ridicule you, saying, this person began to build and wasn't able to finish. I don't think this calls for particularly deep exegesis. In the commentators have always got to say something. They say, well, maybe this tower is a watchtower in a vineyard. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it doesn't add anything. The point Jesus is making is very clear. Don't start something that you can't finish. That's it. Don't start something you can't finish. And similarly, with the next parable. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Won't he first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. Kings going to war is a bit of an alien concept to us, I think. So I used an image here from a concept of warfare that I'm very familiar with, which is a game of Risk. Anyone recognize this particular version of Risk? Risk Europe. Okay, it's Risk Europe. And I have taught my girls this game, and I've even persuaded them that they enjoy playing it. And it can take 4 or 5 hours, and has done on several occasions. And so now we can have real quality father-daughter relationship as we repeatedly say to one another, I'm attacking you. But if I was, I always play blue in Risk because I like to reinforce gender stereotypes at home. But if I'm this little blue fellow here, and Tia's orange over here, then I'm not going to attack her. And I'm not going to attack Petra, who always plays purple up there, because she's stronger than me too. So this little blue guy, although he's got a castle, is best just keeping quiet for a while, you know. And this is, again, this is what all that Jesus is saying in this, this thing about kings. Don't start something you can't finish, or don't start something you can't see through to a successful conclusion. And then finally he says, in the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. Let's just say those words again. In the same way, those of you who do not give up everything you have cannot be my disciples. That's huge, isn't it? And I hope these words don't condemn you, but I hope they do challenge you to a more radical understanding of what it means to follow Jesus. You know, to follow Jesus, it's not that we throw everything away, but that we hold everything with an open hand. You know, our tendency is to hold it with a clenched hand. It's mine. These are my relationships. This is my ambition. This is my money. This is my house. And we want to hold it like that. And Jesus says, just hold it like that. Hold it like that. Because actually, it's mine. I have to come before all of these things. So we don't grasp, we offer. And I believe that's what Toby and Pippa have done. And I didn't know Breeze was going to share all that and those pictures, but I was going to make exactly the same point. They were very comfortable in Marston. Toby had a job. They were financially secure. They went through tremendous upheaval, getting their house emptied, traveling over there. Millie was so sick, on a drip, on IV fluids. Why? Why do it? Doesn't make sense to most people. But they did it because they said, God is calling us to serve him over there. And we agree that that was his call. They have paid that cost. And I know many here have paid that cost, serving overseas in many ways and sometimes paying a price for that. You know, what's interesting as I finish about this passage is that Jesus talks about the cost of following him here. He doesn't say anything about the blessings. Have you noticed? There's no little sort of positive. Oh, but by the way... So you have to ask, is it worth it? Is it worth it? On what basis can Jesus make these demands of us? You know, why should we be willing to lay everything at his feet? And I think the answer is very simple, that through paying a cost, through costly discipleship, we gain something that is priceless. Costly discipleship achieves something that is absolutely priceless. And I was going to list those things, but I thought I'd actually just ask a few of you to shout out. Just shout out some of those things that we have in Christ which are priceless. Peace with God. Peace, just, yeah, less fear. Eternal life. Forgiveness, being loved unconditionally. Hope for the future.
Freedom.
There's loads. You see, many things in life are costly. You have hobbies, and you're prepared to pay a certain price for those. You know, if you love golf, you'll spend a lot of money on golf clubs. Yeah, if you like reading books, you'll buy a lot of books, and so on. We are prepared to pay the price for the things that we love. Relationships are costly. Having kids is costly. Having a dog is costly. Friendships are costly. But that cost pales into insignificance when we love. And the point is then that we need to love God. If we love God, we'll be happy to pay the cost. You know, if we don't love God, then we will settle for comfortable discipleship. Or we may pay some of the cost, but actually do it begrudgingly, which is a very miserable form of Christianity, has to be said. So the message, I think, for us today, and I finish with this, following Jesus means we have to put him before all else, but don't try harder, love more. Love more. I'm really glad we had that song for all its liveliness and the impossibility of doing the actions, but it's heart, soul, strength, mind, love the Lord your God. That is a lovely song to have in a service that is about the cost of discipleship. Because the more we love God, the less we will be aware of the price we pay for following him. And so we're going to sing a song now as we prepare for communion. And it's a song, "All to Jesus I Surrender." And this song is huge. And so I'm inviting you, I guess, to, yes, sing the song if you want to. But if you'd rather, just take some time in quiet, just listen to the song, and just let these words challenge you. You can stand, you can sit, you can kneel, however you want to respond. But let's let these words just sit with us for a while and challenge us.